I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. House Republicans have unveiled a replacement for the Affordable Care Act. The American Health Care Act, as it is called, repeals the individual mandate, the employer mandate, and replaces subsidies with tax credits to pay for health insurance. It keeps coverage for dependents under the age of 26 and coverage for pre-existing conditions included in the ACA. It caps and limits Medicaid coverage for the states, ending the expansion of the program for low-income individuals in 2020. There's much more included in the fine print, and the plan is a long way to go before it becomes law. A number of Republicans are deeply unhappy. There are also many questions. What happens to the 20 million who signed up under the ACA? What will this plan cost? What's the impact on the price of premiums? What does access mean? We have two guests who have joined us to answer all those questions and more. Robert Field is a professor of law and professor of health management and policy at Drexel University Klein School of Law and Dornsife School of Public Health. He's editor and lead writer for Health Sense. That's a blog on Philly.com. And Robert Field, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks. Happy to join you.
Also with us is Timothy Jost, and he's an emeritus professor at the Washington and Lee University School of Law, a contributing editor at Health Affairs. And Timothy Jost, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. I do want to play a clip, but let me just first give out our comment line. You can text us or call us with your questions, 267-405-2006. Let me play what Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, said yesterday when introducing the American Health Care Act.
This is the American Health Care Act. It's been a long time in coming. This bill, the American Health Care Act, it keeps our promise to repeal and replace Obamacare. It delivers relief to Americans fed up with skyrocketing premiums and fewer choices. It moves us away from the broken status quo toward a better patient-centered system. That means lower costs for hardworking families. It means more choices and competition so that you can buy the plan that you need and that you can afford. Let's not forget, Obamacare is collapsing. Obamacare isn't staying. If we did nothing, the law would collapse and leave everybody without affordable health care.
There is much there to discuss. To you, Robert Field, does this fix the problems of the Affordable Care Act?
I think it absolutely does not. The big criticisms of the ACA are completely irrelevant to what Paul Ryan just said. The high deductibles in the plans that keep increasing, the narrow networks, and the lack of competition in a lot of markets, and the rising premiums. There's no reason to suspect that policies would be any better, that we would have more insurance companies jumping in, or that the markets would be feasible, that we would have the right mix of healthy people and sick people. So it really misses the mark on almost every point.
I want to pick up on all of that to you, Timothy Jost. Who are the winners? Who are the losers, as you see, under this American Health Care Act?
Well, the biggest winners are Americans who make more than $250,000 a year because their taxes are going to be reduced by about $300 billion over a 10-year period. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities projects that the 400 highest earning taxpayers in the United States will receive a tax cut of $7 million each. I think it's important to focus on the fact that, as Robert said, this act does very little to stabilize insurance markets or to help people who need health insurance. It's basically a massive tax cut, $600 billion tax cut, for high-income Americans and for insurance companies and for drug manufacturers. And also, it's a program that is going to dramatically cut funding for the Medicaid program over a period of years. But the parts of the proposal that actually deal with the individual health insurance market, which was the focus of much of the reforms in the Affordable Care Act, really doesn't do very much. It will offer more generous coverage for higher income individuals and dramatically less generous coverage for low income Americans.
Are you saying, Timothy Jost, that the losers are low-income Americans?
Absolutely. Low-income Americans, Americans who live in parts of the country where health care costs higher, whether health care premiums are higher, and older people. It's going to dramatically cut support for older Americans.
Robert Field, let me go back to you. And about 20 million people signed up under the Affordable Care Act. How many of those did it through Medicaid?
The majority. So if you take the 20 million number, about 11 or 12 million gain coverage through Medicaid, and then another 8 or so newly gained coverage through the exchanges. And one of the most important pieces of this act, of the new legislation, is that it cuts back on the Medicaid expansion. That has nothing to do with stabilizing the insurance markets. That's a separate issue. If all they did was keep the Medicaid expansion, in fact, they would keep the majority of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act. But it turns Medicaid into what they call a per-person allotment, where each state gets money, a limited amount of money based on each beneficiary. If that beneficiary is very expensive, the state has to eat the difference. It ends the expansion that covers more people in 2020. No new people can join it. And if you cycle off of Medicaid because your income goes up, you can't get back on it. So what they do to Medicaid is in some ways the most draconian part of this.
Is that rationing? Is that what you're talking about?
It could be. The effect could be rationing. Because what's a state to do? Right now, if their indigent population needs more care, they get it. And the state has to pay some more, the federal government has to pay some more, but the patient gets the care. When there's a cap on the amount of money, what are they going to do? They have to cut something. And they're going to cut people off the rolls. They're also going to have to cut care. And that sounds an awful lot like rationing.
What do you think, Timothy Jost?
Yeah, I would agree with that. That Medicaid, for the past 60 years, has been a program in which the federal government has offered to match at varying rates the coverage that states offer to take care of their poorest and most dependent populations, the elderly, the disabled, families with dependent children, and in more recent years, pregnant women and low-income working adults. And once you move from a matching program, an entitlement program, which it has always been, to a per capita cap program where you put a limit on the amount that the states can get, the states are going to have to cut back on services. They're going to have to cut back on the populations that they cover. They're going to have to cut back to pay on payments to providers, which are already very low in most states. And it is simply rationing.
There is also, go ahead, Robert Field.
I was going to say, a city like Philadelphia is particularly vulnerable, partly because we have so many indigent patients. The percent of people who gain coverage in Philadelphia under the ACA is almost 1 out of 6 residents.
Wow.
We also have a lot of hospitals which have to treat uninsured people. So they face a financial risk if a lot of those patients are now uninsured once again.
Now, it does get rid of the mandate, but it has this penalty. And this is getting into the weeds, but, you know, health insurance is all about weeds. Tim, I wonder if you could speak to this, which is that if it doesn't mandate that people get insurance, but if you have insurance and then you drop out and then you re-enter it, you're going to pay a penalty.
Yeah, it actually it's interesting. It doesn't get rid of the mandate. What it does is zeroes out the penalty for the mandate. So because of the way in which the Senate reconciliation procedures work, so the mandate actually is still there. It's just there's no penalty for violating it. But the continuous coverage requirement is what it offers to substitute for the mandate, and what it means is that if during any part of a one-year period you're without coverage for 63 days or more, when you then try to get back your coverage, a penalty is imposed for 12 months equal to 30% of your premium. So your premium would increase by 30%. Now, since the statute also, the bill also would increase the age rating ratio, the ratio of how much older people pay to how much younger people pay, from the current 3-to-1 to 5-to-1, this would mean that older people would face a very substantial penalty if they had a gap in coverage, which is going to discourage healthy as well as unhealthy older people from enrolling. Since the penalty is based on premiums, it's also going to be greater for high-cost areas, and it's going to be a penalty that is probably going to discourage healthy as well as unhealthy people from enrolling, because if you're healthy, you're going to look at that penalty and say, well, maybe I don't need insurance coverage anyway. But if you're really sick, 30% penalty may not look too bad to get coverage again. So it's really unclear that this approach is going to do much for stabilizing the individual insurance market. And frankly, insurers aren't too excited about it.
Robert Field, there's something else that's kind of buried in this plan, a number of pages that are devoted to lottery winners. This is something that you identified. In fact, you were stopping by the studio yesterday that you identified when you looked at this plan. What does it say and what does it mean?
So I think this is an example of how this plan is really more a political document than a serious blueprint for the healthcare system. 6 or 7 pages are devoted to the issue of how you treat lottery winnings when someone is under Medicaid. Presumably, they don't want people collecting Medicaid, winning the lottery, and then laughing on the way to the bank. How many people do that? I don't know any lottery winners. There aren't a whole lot. It's the equivalent of having a special coverage provision for people who get struck by lightning. Why would it be there? It's clearly aimed at a specific constituency. Another important piece is that it defunds all Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood. Again, that's not going to stabilize any insurance markets. That's entirely irrelevant here. So little pieces like that make it seem less like a serious plan and more like a sort of shout out to different constituencies.
And we're almost up at a break here. It defunds Planned Parenthood for a year, as I understand it.
What they're doing is coming, fulfilling their pledge to defund Planned Parenthood and showing the base that they are true to their word.
Well, we are talking about the American Health Care Act introduced by the Republicans in the House this week to replace the Affordable Care Act. That's Robert Field and also with us, Timothy Jost. And we are picking through what we know. We also want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can text or call our comment line, 267-405-2006. What do you want to know? This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. We're talking about what's in and what's out of the American Health Care Act and its possible impact on people who get insurance, health insurance in this country. Of course, that's for a lot of people. Robert Field joining us from Drexel University. Timothy Jost also joining us from Washington and Lee University. And again, we are taking comments at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me play just a couple of clips. This first clip is Senator Mike Lee. He's a member of the House Freedom Caucus. They are not happy with this bill, and let's give him a listen.
What's been introduced in the House in the last 24 hours is not the Obamacare replacement plan, not the Obamacare repeal plan we've been hoping for. This is instead a step in the wrong direction, and as much as anything, it's a missed opportunity. Look, we've seen what happens when Congress decides to put forward a plan negotiated behind closed doors, where members are told you've got to pass this bill in order to find out what's in it. It's usually not a good product.
So a lot of politics there. Let me play another clip, and this is Representative Jason Chaffetz, Republican from Utah. He was talking about low-income Americans unable to afford health care coverage and what they should do.
We're getting rid of the individual mandate. We're getting rid of those things that people said that they don't want. And you know what? Americans have choices, and they've got to make a choice. And so maybe rather than getting that new iPhone that they just love and they want to go spend hundreds of dollars on that, maybe they should invest it in their own health care. They've got to make those decisions themselves.
And we found a clip from a couple of years ago. This is President Obama defending the Affordable Care Act on Telemundo from 2014. And let's give that a listen.
I guess what I would say is if you looked at that person's budget and you looked at their cable bill, their telephone, their cell phone bill, other things that they're spending on, it may turn out that it's just they haven't prioritized health care because right now everybody's healthy. Nobody actually wants to spend money on health insurance until they get sick.
Timothy, just you want to comment on what we heard also from Jason Chaffetz, but also from President Obama about the reluctance of Americans, whether they're low-income Americans or Americans broadly speaking, to pay health insurance?
Well, I mean, I think there's some truth in what President Obama said, that health insurance premiums are like car repairs. Nobody really gets much pleasure out of paying for them. And for a lot of moderate-income Americans, I think they probably don't really realize how much health insurance costs. And when you're asked to pay for it in the individual market, the bills are kind of shocking. I mean, most of us are covered through our employer,
right,
and most of us pay very little attention to how much our employer is spending or even perhaps how much we're spending through the monthly deductions from our checks. On the other hand, it sounds to me like Representative Chaffetz probably has spent very little time with his low-income constituents. I know people who are receiving assistance through the Affordable Care Act and who are really struggling from month to month to just meet basic expenditures, to pay the rent, to pay for food, and to cover their car repairs so that they can get to work. And sometimes you just can't make the premium for a month. And I think that's a real problem with the continuous coverage requirement. And so I think what the Affordable Care Act did, primarily through the Medicaid expansion, as Robert has mentioned, but also through generous subsidies for premiums and also, very importantly, subsidies for cost sharing for very low-income Americans, made health insurance coverage possible, and the Republican proposal would simply take that away.
Well, Robert, let me go back to you and a couple of things. The cost of health insurance compared to the cost of either iPhone or a smartphone. I wonder if you could answer that. Also, there is this tax credit that's part of this new act, between $2,000 and $4,000 tax credit to allow people to go out to the market and get insurance for themselves. What can an individual get for $2,000, especially, let's say, here in Philadelphia?
A couple of new iPhones, maybe.
That's about it. In terms of insurance, though, what does that get you?
Essentially nothing. One of the features of the tax credits under the ACA is that it is geared to income. And if you are indigent, you pay almost nothing for insurance on the exchange. And in addition, as Tim was saying, you don't even have to pay copays and deductibles. There is a group of people who are hit hard, the people just wealthy enough to not get the subsidies. But most of the people who really have to struggle are taken care of. So there's not a fixed dollar amount. It depends what the cost of insurance is and what your income is. The new tax credits are capped at specific amounts, and they're geared primarily to your age. So if you're younger, you're going to get less of a tax credit, even if you're quite poor. If you're older, you get more, although the rich won't get those. In terms of the mandate, it's interesting the way this was framed when Mitt Romney did his plan in Massachusetts, and I'm disappointed that Obama never took up on this. They called it the personal responsibility requirement.
Hmm.
And the idea is that we have this large healthcare system, and it's sitting out there and it's available to you. You can go to an emergency room and get emergency care if you need it. There's indigent care. There's a whole web of different kinds of services, and you should be paying your fair share. Maybe you'll be fortunate and you won't need to use your share of it, but you may be unfortunate and you may have to use a huge amount of it. So you're really, in a sense, a freeloader if you're not paying your fair share. So they called it a personal responsibility requirement. I wonder if Obama had done that, whether that would have polled better.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I mean, words do matter. I was reading that if it's called the Affordable Care Act,
right,
there's one perspective about whether people like it or not. If it's called Obamacare, then the support for that health care, our current health care system, goes down, Robert Field. So words matter.
They certainly do. You know, Jimmy Kimmel a couple of years ago did those famous interviews on the street to see if people knew the difference. And in the last couple of weeks, he redid them and was still able to find a selection of people on the street outside a studio who said that they like the Affordable Care Act, but they want to get rid of Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And there was just a poll showing that 30% of respondents couldn't tell the difference.
Oh, it's so depressing when you see things like that. Let me go back to you, Timothy Jones. Is there anything in this, and this is still a work in progress, but is there anything in this that would address either the high cost of premiums, high deductibles, the fact that a number of insurance companies have pulled out of some of the exchanges because they just don't want to be involved in the system? Does this do anything to address that?
Well, there is one provision in the legislation that could potentially do that. The legislation would provide a $100 billion over 9 years, starting at $15 billion a year for the first 2 years and then $10 billion a year for the next 7 years, to the states to help with primarily focused on stabilizing insurance markets. The states would submit proposals. They could use it for reinsurance, for high-risk pools, for paying providers directly, for supplementing cost sharing, for various purposes. And if the states did nothing, then the money would be used for reinsurance. And so the idea there is that it would be a way for the states to help stabilize insurance markets, and the states would have to match the federal contributions according to a formula that would increase over time. So there is that in the legislation. Whether the states are the best places to put that responsibility, whether they would be capable of setting up programs that would do that is another question, and also a big question is whether the money is adequate to do very much. It probably isn't. But the other thing is that the leaked proposal that came out last week would have allowed the insurers to offer fewer benefits to get rid of what are called some of the essential health benefits. The final bill does not do this, but it does allow plans to it does get rid of what are called the actuarial value requirements.
Yikes.
that are imposed by the Affordable Care Act that say that plans have to offer, have to cover certain percentages of costs and thus limit the cost sharing that can be imposed on individuals. But because they don't get rid of some other requirements, they really don't provide that much flexibility to insurers. So I think what some of the conservatives in the House were hoping was that the legislation would allow insurers to offer really, really cheap plans that, of course, would be virtually worthless, but at least would be more affordable. And this legislation really doesn't do that.
I mean, it's to have a system that's offering plans that are worthless and affordable, that is not a healthcare system.
Well, one of the arguments is that what we're trying to do is to make health insurance accessible. And we're not going to worry so much about affordability. So, yeah, if everybody can afford an insurance policy that covers absolutely nothing, I suppose you can argue you've covered more people.
Robert, let me read a text to you. This is sort of related to what we just heard Tim talk about. This is a text from a Delaware listener. When will we be able to buy health insurance across state lines? I'm in Delaware. I have zero options. Unfair. I don't believe it's included in this, but I heard Paul Ryan and some others say that, you know, this is something that they are interested in including perhaps in some future plan.
Yeah, and it's something that Trump has been talking about a lot. It's not going to help your listener. The big national companies already have a subsidy in every state. So in essence, if you want to buy a United Healthcare policy, they are capable of selling it in every state. There are a few states that actually tried that. They tried opening up their borders and saying, we will let companies licensed in other states sell in our state. I think Georgia was one that did it, and it failed because the companies weren't interested in it, because health insurance is different than other kinds of insurance. You can sell fire insurance. It's just a financial transaction. But healthcare, you have to have a network of providers. So for a company out of state to come in and sign up doctors and hospitals and negotiate all of that, that's a lot of work and a lot of expense. And it's really not going to be worth it for a small market share. All this would do would be allow companies to go to the least regulated states and then sell policies nationwide. So you'd have fewer consumer protections, but you wouldn't have more choices. It's not going to add competition. It's simply going to add less regulation. And the fact is that the states can do it right now. There's nothing to prevent Delaware from telling other states that will allow your insurance companies in. The fact that the states haven't done it on their own, I think, says a lot. And to allow the federal government to tell the states you have to do it, that's actually stepping on state sovereignty and imposing federal rules on what had been the province of the states.
And that, I guess, leads to some kind of courtroom battle. Timothy, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I'm a consumer representative to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, and the state insurance commissioners are absolutely opposed to this. It would be a disaster in terms of consumer protection. And as Rob said, it really wouldn't increase competition.
I see, and I was expecting that there would be some comments saying, well, what about Medicare for all? President Trump said this is complicated, and indeed health insurance is very complicated. But it is a question out there, Timothy, whether there is a way of trying to simplify the system that provides, you know, worthwhile and affordable coverage, and whether Medicare for all or some version of that or a single payer would fix that problem.
Well, this has been the dream of liberals in the United States for decades, almost a century. But there are just so many reasons why it's so hard to get from here to there in terms of very strong stakeholder interests, in terms of the politics of the United States. If the proposal that's before Congress is too liberal for many of the conservatives in Congress, how could we ever get to a single-payer system? In terms of the ideology of many Americans, but also just in terms of our history, we took a distinct path in the 1950s when we decided to go the route of employer-sponsored coverage, and in the 1960s when President Johnson's Medicare and Medicaid program filled some of the biggest gaps. And so what we're really left with is a system which functions poorly in many respects, but which covers most people reasonably well. Moving from that to a single-payer system would be massively disruptive. So I think it's not going to happen in my lifetime. And
how old are you? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Yeah. He has good health care. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Robert, let me turn to you because I'm looking at what is – repealed as part of this plan, which is the employer mandate. Do you anticipate big employers getting out of providing health insurance for their employees?
I don't think big employers are going to get out of health insurance. I think the medium-sized ones might. The ACA sets the benchmark at 50. So if you have 50 or more employees, you have to provide health insurance. The big companies have not been dropping coverage and dumping people into the exchanges. In fact, with the economy slowly starting to recover, they've been adding health benefits because they need to attract workers. Americans expect that if you work for a large company, you're going to get health care, and the companies have a market incentive to keep providing it. The companies from 50 to, say, 200 employees, those are the ones that might decide this is too expensive and we can't afford it, and we'll let people go into the new Brian Care or whatever it's called. So that's where the effect would be felt. But it's been interesting since the ACA took effect, companies across the board have actually been adding health insurance on their own.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
One of the great ironies of this legislation is that, once again, because of Senate procedures, it does not actually repeal the employer mandate either. It simply zeroes out the penalty. And the employer mandate is very easy to evade. You can offer your employees almost nothing and comply. The real problem has been the tremendous paperwork burden that it imposes on employers through lots of complicated reporting requirements, and those remain in place. So we kind of lose all the benefits, whatever they are, of the employer mandate, but all of the burdens basically remain.
Well, we're talking about the wildebeest of healthcare in health insurance in this country. That's Timothy Jost of Health Affairs and Robert Field from Drexel University. And we got a lot of people that have comments here, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times and call or text our comment line 267-405-2006. I'll read some of those comments. We've got some more clips for you as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Robert Field from Drexel University and Timothy Jost from Washington and Lee University about the American Health Care Act, what we know so far. Let me play a clip here, and this is the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tom Price, talking about this new bill, and this was at a White House press conference briefing yesterday. Let's give that a listen.
There will be no changes at all in the current law, but we're talking about those people in the individual and small group market, the moms and pops, the folks who run the corner grocery store, the corner cleaners. Those individuals out there are having huge challenges gaining care and gaining coverage. And then Medicaid is a program that, by and large, has decreased the ability for folks to gain access to care, and we want to make certain that we address that. This is about patients. This is not about money. This is not about something else. This is about patience.
And I should add that Tom Price, when he was a member of Congress, made it his business to try to defund, repeal, and replace the Affordable Care Act. Let me read a couple of comments here. I want to know how responsible health care reform can be considered without looking at the multi-billion-dollar insurance industry. A text from a listener, would it not make more sense to modify the Affordable Care Act than to repeal and replace? An email from Laura. She says, did the elected officials who developed this new health care bill attempt to get feedback from key constituencies such as insurance companies, hospital groups, etc.? A comment from Genevieve, just reading at the bottom there. She says, the Democrats need to embrace this instead of defending a plan that is completely not helping middle-income Americans. Robert Field, would you say that under the Affordable Care Act, that it is the middle-income Americans that have had to pay for the high price of their premiums because they haven't gotten the subsidies, but they are, you know, they're required and mandated essentially to get this care?
There definitely is a subset of middle-income Americans who fall into that group. If you make more than four times the federal poverty level, you can't get a subsidy, but you're still subject to the mandate. And There are people who are paying higher and higher prices for coverage that in some cases is shrinking more and more. And I would not dispute that that's a shortcoming of the ACA. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that that's a reason to throw the baby out with the bathwater. That can be fixed. Hillary Clinton said that she would extend the subsidies to higher incomes. That would be one way to go about it. Stabilizing the market and encouraging more competition would be another way to go about it. But that listener is right. That's one of the gaps in the law that should be addressed. Again, you don't have to throw out the whole law to address it.
Well, I'm wondering, Timothy Jost, about, first of all, the fate of the exchanges. And I'm assuming until this passes, we still live under the Affordable Care Act. And yet, you know, it's described as collapsing and, you know, a nightmare for this country. What is going to happen, you think, over the next months or maybe even years before whatever the Republicans come up with goes into effect? Does this hurt, I guess, the existing system?
I think there's a real question right now as to what happens with the existing system. In the first place, there are, you know, 50 state insurance markets, and what's been going on differs greatly from one market to the next. In some, there were very large premium increases and insurers exiting, and in others, the premium increases were much more moderate, and the insurers remained. And in a number of the states, I think that the markets were, in fact, stable, and in others, they were stabilizing. The whole debate has been, as well as some other things that are going on right now, has been a tremendously destabilizing force. Mm. And I think the most important question right now is there is a lawsuit in which the House of Representatives has sued the Department of Health and Human Services, claiming that the cost-sharing reduction payments, we're talking about maybe $7 to $9 billion in money, which are owed to the insurers, shouldn't be paid because the House argues there was no appropriation. That case is on hold right now, but should the courts rule for the House, I think it's pretty well accepted that the insurers would head for the door.
Wow.
And so the entire individual market, not just the marketplaces, could collapse. That could also happen if the insurers are not convinced that Congress is serious about stabilizing insurance markets going forward. So I think we could, we'll know soon, but I think we could easily see a situation where there is no individual insurance market in many states in the United States, starting in 2018. But it's not because of Obamacare. It is because of, and I could spend a lot more time talking about this.
I won't let you, but yeah, no, go ahead.
Problems created by the Republicans.
Interesting. Let me read a tweet from Heather. This is for you, Robert. Wondering if the proposed GOP plan will still require insurance companies to invest 85% of revenue in care and not profit. Can you answer that?
I didn't see anything, maybe Tim saw something, I didn't see anything that addressed that provision. On the other hand, I didn't see anything that addressed all sorts of provisions in the Act. It was quite limited. This law is something like 66 pages. The ACA is about 2,000 pages. So there's clearly a lot that it didn't address. As best as I could tell, that would still be in there. The question is, would it be enforced? So if nothing gets passed in Congress, there's still a question of what the Trump administration would do with the ACA, whether it would continue to enforce things like the mandate and the cost sharing and the medical loss ratio provision you were referring to.
Well, one thing that is in the legislation is that it repeals a provision in the ACA that would limit the amount that insurance companies could claim as a business expense for compensation for their executives to $500,000 a year.
Right.
So it does allow insurers to give big raises to their executives. But the medical loss ratio provision, as it's called, there's nothing about that in the new proposal.
Robert, Sean Spicer made a pretty big deal yesterday at the White House when he had on the table the 66 pages of the American Health Care Act compared to the 2,000-whatever pages of the Affordable Care Act. Do pages of health insurance, does that matter?
No. Also, did anyone check on what font they were printed out in?
I don't think so. But yeah, interesting question.
But those 2,000 pages have all sorts of important provisions in them, many of which are below the public's radar and even the press's radar outside of the kind of wonka sphere that Tim and I live in. Medical student loans, generic versions of biotechnology drugs, accountable care organizations, which are integrated systems of doctors and hospitals, the Medicare donut hole, that infamous gap in coverage for prescription drugs that the ACA had filled in. What are they going to do about that? Medicare quality incentives, the structure of the exchanges themselves. Are we still going to have websites that function like a Travelocity for healthcare? So the additional 1,900 and 940 pages have a lot of meat in them. And so just stacking up pieces of paper doesn't tell us very much.
President Trump yesterday seemed to indicate that he supported what he had seen so far with this health care plan. But let me play a clip. This goes back to 2015. He was on 60 Minutes talking about his ideas on health care. Let's give it a listen.
Obamacare is going to be repealed and replaced. Obamacare is a disaster. If you look at what's going on with premiums, where they're up 45, 50, 55%.
So how do you fix it?
There's many different ways, by the way. Everybody's got to be covered. This is an un-Republican thing for me to say, because a lot of times they say, no, the lower 25%, they can't afford private. But
universal health care.
I am going to take care of everybody. I don't care if it costs me votes or not. Everybody's going to be taken care of much better than they're taken care of now.
The uninsured person?
Right.
Is going to be taken care of.
They're going to be taken care of.
How?
I would make a deal with existing hospitals to take care of people. And you know what? This is probably...
Make a deal. Who pays for it?
The government's going to pay for it, but we're going to save so much money on the other side. But for the most part, it's going to be a private plan, and people are going to be able to go out and negotiate great plans with lots of different competition, with lots of competitors, with great companies, and they can have their doctors, they can have their plans, they can have everything.
And puppies and kittens as well. To you, Timothy Jost, I mean, as the president seemed to learn more recently, this is complicated. You can't promise all that stuff without getting, I guess, into the nitty gritty, but without some really serious decisions that have to be made. Nonetheless, a lot of people voted for candidate Trump because he made these kinds of promises.
Yeah, well, there is that great statement last week, who would have known how complicated health care is? I think everybody else did.
Yeah.
It's interesting, one of the bills that's being debated today in the House is a bill proposed by Democrats asking the president and HHS to produce all documents relative to their plans for health care reform. So maybe we will find out whether, in fact, there was any plan at all. Seriously, don't believe there was, but he now is pushing ahead with the congressional plan and trying to support it, which does not reflect anything that he promised.
Let me play a caller. This is Jean. She called into our comment line.
My name is Jean. I'm a retired primary care physician who still teaches medical students. What is missing from the discussion this morning is a comment on values. We continue to teach our young doctors that everybody is deserving of care and everybody should be treated. But the new Republican plan clearly says that some lives are worth more than others and that we actually do not believe in this country that everybody deserves health care. I think there needs to be more emphasis on this underlying principle.
I appreciate that comment, Jean. Robert Field, you want to weigh in on this? And she's absolutely right. We have not talked about values in this hour. And I think that's a very important discussion to have when talking about something as important as healthcare.
Yeah, and in a sense, values underlie everything and determine where we come at this. The U.S. is, I believe, the only major industrialized country that does not have a right to healthcare in its constitution. And I think that says something, even though our Constitution is over 200 years old, that what we're concerned about is restraining the government, not having it do more for us. And if you look at most of the European countries, their concern is communitarianism, solidarity. What can the government, as the manifestation of the people, do to make life better for all of us? And that's a fundamentally different value system. I think where the Republicans are coming from is this sense of personal autonomy. We're not going to tell you what to do. We're just going to stand back and try to get out of the way. Now, whether they actually have accomplished that is a separate question. The Democrats are coming at it and saying health care saves lives. Lives are important. We've got to do what we can to make sure that the most vulnerable among us are protected. But there's a fundamental value difference there, and we're not going to resolve it. We're just going to have to put up with the consequences of it.
Tony, an email from Tony. I want to put this to you, Tim. This is something you referenced. He says, how does it legally allow tax breaks for insurance executives with salaries over $500,000? Do you have an answer to that?
Yeah, what the Affordable Care Act did, just simply revised the tax law so that, normally businesses can claim as a business expense on their taxes compensation for their employees. And it simply capped the amount of compensation that could be claimed as a business expense for executives. I should say, though, that insurers, by and large, have been losing money in the individual market. I think at this point, most insurers would be happy to have 15%. Many of them are over 100%.
Really?
in claims. So I think that the medical loss ratio requirements of the Affordable Care Act were very important at the time. But I think right now a higher priority is getting insurers back to the point where they're actually making enough money in the individual market that it's an attractive place for them to remain.
Almost out of time here. Let me just squeeze. Here's an email from Diane for you, Robert. I'm wondering what health coverage Congress has and whether it's affected by the new plan. Do you know the answer to that?
Yeah, so Congress agreed that they would go under the ACA exchanges as a way of saying, sort of put your health where your mouth is. If you think this is so great, give up your government sponsored plan and go with your own device. I don't think this law changes that.
Ah, interesting. And to you, Timothy Jost, the CBO has not scored this, so we don't know what it will cost. How important is that in determining whether this goes forward or not?
It's, I think, vitally important. People need to know what, before any Congress takes any action on this, people need to know how much it's going to cost. And frankly, how much it's going to drive up the deficit, because all we know so far is that it's cutting $600 billion in revenues. And there's no obvious place in which it's going to be cutting expenditures, except in cutting Medicaid.
Mm. And to you, Robert Field, we have tried over decades now to have some kind of health insurance for everybody. This is hard. I think we can all agree on that. Are we back to the drawing board here?
I sure hope not. After 100 years, we finally came up with something. The ACA is undeniably clumsy. It's got more moving parts than it really needs, but we actually added coverage for over 20 million people. And if all of the states had expanded Medicaid, we would have added another 10 million or so to those rolls. So hopefully it's not back to the drawing board. Hopefully we can build on the progress that we've made.
Well, Robert Field, as always, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
From Drexel University, also editor and lead writer for the Health Sense blog on Philly.com. Timothy Jost, it's been a couple of years. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
You're very welcome. Emeritus professor at the Washington and Lee University School of Law, contributing editor at Health Affairs. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can figure out how to download a podcast of the program. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nouri. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.